We should be live now. It's great to be here because I don't have to go very far. We just live in the West End of London and go to West Park. So all of you former West Parkians, it's good to see you still go to church somewhere. We do have four kids, and they're all grown up and floundering around like the rest of the grown-ups. My youngest daughter, Caitlin, is trying to get into social work program at Dalhousie out in Halifax. And she said, Dad, it's so hard to figure out what I want to do. And I said, yep. And so hard for us, your mom and I, to figure out what to do as well. Never really changes as you continue to follow God. So many opportunities and so little time. But today we're going to talk about justice and injustice. And I want to ask a question that I actually do get asked, and that is, seriously, does it really matter? All these big problems in the world, do they really matter? When we worked with Kids Alive, my mom had held a little fundraiser, and the next day a lady said, thanked her for doing that, and my mom said, well, I'm glad you came. And she said, oh, don't mention it, you know, what's $10, you know, for a good meal? And she said, but I need to ask you a question. Why don't they just take all those little children and just put them in a room and let them die? That was the real word-for-word question my mom was asked. Nobody has ever said anything quite that stark to me, but I do get asked, does it really matter? When our oldest daughter, Sharon, was in India, one of her former soccer coaches, I was with him at a get-together, and he said, I'm really excited about what Sharon is doing over there in India, helping to release slaves. But, you know, it's too bad that none of it makes a difference in the world. It's too bad that she's going to do all that work, and it really doesn't make a difference. So the question is, does it really matter, seriously, what we do about justice and injustice in the world? And does it matter to us as believers? One of the best statements I've ever heard was by A.W. Tozer, and he said, what you believe about God is the most important thing about you. What you believe about God is the most important thing about you. And that has a great bearing on this question. As we look at a couple of scriptures from Jeremiah, you'll begin to see that what you think about God will have great bearing on what you do about justice and injustice. So the first scripture is from Jeremiah chapter 9. In case you can't see it from there, you can look it up. Chapter 9, verse 23 and 24. Let not the wise boast of their wisdom, or the strong boast of their strength, or the rich boast of their riches. But let the one who boasts boast about this, that they have the understanding to know me, that I am the Lord who exercises kindness, justice, and righteousness on earth. For in these things I delight, declares the Lord. What do we know about God? It's going to have a great impact on whether you care about justice or not. We know that our God is different from some other gods. That's the difference, or that's the example that's going on here. Jeremiah was telling them, God speaking through Jeremiah, that he's not like any other God. He doesn't delight in all of those things that people chase after, whether it's wisdom or strength or riches. What he cares about are three other things: kindness, justice, and righteousness. And in the scriptures, we find that justice and righteousness are practically interchangeable terms. We tend to have divided them out in modern-day usage. But in Scripture, justice and righteousness, so the outward seeking of what's right and the inward seeking of what's right in our lives, they're interchangeable. There's no difference from one to the other. Kindness, justice, and righteousness on the earth. And we learn here that if you don't know about justice, you can't know much about God. Because what you believe about God is the most important thing about you. The God we serve is a God of justice, and he expects that kind of behavior from those who follow him. So what does that mean for us in IJM. I want to show you some pictures today, and in spite of the fact that we deal in very harsh realities in IJM, the pictures that I'm going to show you hopefully will leave you a little less traumatized than some. If we go to the next one, the first one here, this is Vincent. Vincent lives in Kenya, and Vincent is a very happy man. He's a strong Christian believer. He's a father of young children and a husband. And he was walking home one day, and there was a shootout nearby. The police were having a little gun battle with some other people. And he got picked up on the way home and put in prison as one of the perpetrators. Put in prison without charge, without any kind of recourse to a lawyer, with no evidence whatsoever, he was in prison. And we find that in places like Kenya, about two-thirds of the prisons in many countries, certainly in Africa it's a big problem, in Kenya two-thirds of the prisons there are contain people, or two-thirds of the people in prison, sorry, are uncharged. Uncharged. They not only are going to not get a lawyer, they're not even going to get a court date. They're just going to languish there for a very long time. And one of the problems is, how do you find your husband when he doesn't come home? Where do you look? You know, here we can make phone calls all around. People will start helping us look. Institutions will tell us if they came into the emergency ward. But in a place like Kenya, you could even go to the prison and look and ask for him by name, and they may not even have a record that he's there. He may not even have been signed in. Vincent languished like that for a year and a half before IJM was able to prove in court that he had done absolutely nothing wrong. And the opposing attorney, in the course of this drawn-out legal proceeding, at one time said to our lawyer, "Yeah, we know he didn't do anything. But isn't this a good way for you to get a real feather in your cap and win a case?" And so that's the kind of injustice there is in the world. Does it matter? It matters a lot to Vincent. It also matters a lot to this family. A very happy, smiling family from India. They were held as slaves in a brick factory for many, many years. In fact, some slaves that we've rescued in India have been there for three generations. The grandfather borrowed $6 or $8, and the interest was so high he was eventually drawn into the situation of bonded labor, they call it, or slavery, and his children were born there and his grandchildren. This family was in that kind of situation. They were set free by an IJM operation and began to get the 2 years of aftercare that we provide for them. Do you think justice matters to them? It matters big time. It matters especially to those kids who had the taste of slavery, because children begin working as soon as they can carry a brick, as soon as they can turn bricks over on the ground. We've rescued kids who can't even put full sentences together yet, but they were able to show adults what they were doing in the brickyard, and they will show them, they'll get a brick and they'll turn it over, and then they'll turn it over again, because that's how you dry them in the sun. So this family is free. They're free to pursue business, they're free to pursue education and health care, and they will never be slaves again. And these kids can grow up to be whatever they choose to be. And in IJM we have a problem in that many of the children we rescue want to become policemen and lawyers. Policemen, lawyers, and social workers, I should say, because those are the Christian people they meet first. Those are the people who they get to know and seem to be the ones who cared enough to set them free. Next, there we go. Does justice matter to this grandmother? Her name is Grace. Grace is there with one of her grandchildren. She was stripped of all her property, all her belongings, when her husband died. She was looking after grandchildren at the time, and everything was taken, including the little house that she's sitting in there. Does justice matter when you have absolutely nothing left? Absolutely, it matters. It matters a great deal. but very, very few people in the developing world ever see it. Very few people in poverty ever have access to justice. And I mean ordinary justice, because justice is expensive, and justice is for the powerful and the rich. But in this case, we were able to help her, go to court for her, and have her belongings and home returned. And she's now able to support her grandchildren and enable them to go to school. Does justice matter? It matters to God, and it matters to all of these people. Does justice matter to kids this small? We were just looking at some videos at our house of our kids when they were little. Our two oldest girls were born, well, the oldest one was born in Zambia, and then Jenny was born here, and we took her back to Zambia. We were watching pictures of them when Jenny was about two, and Sharon was about four. And Jenny was just like this little girl with the lollipop there. She just liked to eat. Now, she's horrified when I told her this the other day, that she was a chubby little thing, but very, very cute. You know, you have kids and grandchildren in this church that are this size, and you can't imagine that anybody would consider them, you know, a target to take advantage of. But it's fairly routine in Latin America, in IJM, our offices there. Several times a year, we have victims that we deal with who have been violated sexually, and they're 2 years old. It's not uncommon. It's a shocking revelation when you first hear about it. But it's not so shocking when you hear about it for about the 10th time and you realize that evil can get worse than you thought. In fact, this year in September, we had an email on a Tuesday, and it said, please pray for so-and-so, our newest client. She's having a reconstructive surgery for the sexual assault she was a victim of. She's 7 months old. That's the youngest we've had so far. 7 months old. Does justice matter for them? Does it matter if we stop these people before they commit these crimes? Of course. It matters to God, and it matters to them. Let's look at Jeremiah again, from further along in Jeremiah chapter 22. Again, this is what the Lord says. He says, did not your father have food and drink? He did what was right and just, so all went well with him. He defended the cause of the poor and needy, and so all went well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord? A rhetorical question at the end there. If you can't really know God without knowing justice, we also learn here that you really can't have the good life, where all goes well, however you want to define that. You can't have the good life without being a person who is just and who sticks up for the poor. The good life is not just a series of places to work out in. I thought that was a good line. I was hoping to sort of market it somehow. It's not just all about being in shape. And you'll know that that's the case with me, because between services, I'll be in the gym buying cupcakes. The good life really is a just life. The life that follows God, the life where you can say all is well, is a just life. Does it matter? It matters a lot. Another friend from Kenya, this is Daniel. He's in his late 70s. He was in prison illegally because somebody broke into the place where he was a night watchman, tied him and two others up, and then proceeded to kill one of the people inside and rob And the next day, when the police came, they arrested the security guards. Actually, two of the security guards were not arrested. They ran away. But Daniel was there, and they put him in prison. And again, he would have been there for a long, long time. As it was, he was in there for the better part of 2 years, until a year ago, this time in January, he was released. And this is him walking out of the prison that day. And he was released again because somebody took the time to intervene. Now, every time somebody intervenes like that, it means that somebody organized an IJM office. It means that somebody contributed money to organize an IJM office. It means that somebody prayed so somebody would give to to organize a ministry that would help set him free. It's a chain reaction. Every decision that's made in IJM is made, actually, by the people who decide to pray and give. That's how the decision for him to be a client was made. The people on the field can only exist and work because of people here who decide to be a part of it. So whenever you think about your giving, whenever you think about groups like IJM or any of the others that are on the wall out there, what you're doing when you decide to pray, when you decide to give, is actually making something happen. For example, last week ago, Friday, my nephew, Nathan, graduated from Teen Challenge. And he spent a year there in the rehab program, and it's done wonders for him. Completely changed his life. Completely changed how he acts, in fact, and how he thinks, and how he responds to the world around him. And we had a big celebration at North Park when there were four guys who graduated. Now, here's the thing. Somewhere along the way, somebody decided to pray for such a thing. Somebody decided to give. Somebody decided to volunteer. Somebody organized the office in the Teen Challenge Farm. And then somebody decided to work there and help people overcome their addiction. But all of those things begin with the one who decides to pray and give. That's how Daniel was set free. The interesting thing is he actually came to our global prayer gathering a few months later in Washington, D.C., and he can't speak English, so we listened to him through a translator. And he kept saying how God had done this and God had done that. And then every now and then he would say, and IJM. And then he'd go back to praising God for all that he had done, and IJM too. So this man is full of the knowledge of what God does in the world and how he sticks up for the poor. Does it matter to these kids? Of course. These children will never be slaves. Their parents were set free. They're participating at the end of a training program, a 3-day leadership training program. They go to school. They get health care. They have come to know that they don't have to be different and less valuable than other people. It changes how you even think about yourself. It changes how you think about what your future might be. In India, we had our first law school graduate a year ago last summer, a man who was a teenage slave when he was rescued, one of the first rescues in India. He went from illiterate slave to a lawyer in 8 years. And that gives you a good idea of the determination that can happen when you are set free, when you realize how bad things can be. And what about these kids? None of them deserve to be slaves, and yet all of them are potential slaves. All of them are at risk of being exploited by people who are stronger and smarter, people who are bigger and meaner than them. So it doesn't matter if people decide to pursue justice, it's going to make the difference for thousands and thousands of people. This lady was not a citizen until she got that little card. She's now a citizen. It's a difference between life and death. In northern Thailand, where if you don't have citizenship, you can't even move down the road because there are roadblocks every few kilometers and you're stopped from leaving your area. But people can come into your area and they can capture you and take you as a slave. They can sexually abuse you. They can kill you. And nobody really cares because you don't exist. You don't exist without that little piece of plastic that says you're a citizen of that country. You're not a citizen of any country. Nobody owns you. Nobody cares about you. And now she is a citizen. She's a real person. If you've ever read The Velveteen Rabbit and how you become real in the end, this lady now feels real. She feels like a real visible person that means something. So you might be thinking, cool story, bro. tell it again. For those of you who are too old, this is a meme on the internet. Cool story, bro. It's what you say to somebody when you are really bored with what they're saying, and you're tired of listening to them. So I'm just thinking, maybe some of you are at that point looking at your watch. It's time for cupcakes. And you might be saying this, seriously, so you've rescued a few people here and there. Do you really think you're going to make headway against these massive problems? Here at this church, you've been supporting IJM financially and prayerfully for quite a while. I would say a minimum of 8, possibly 10 years, because we come here to speak every 2 years or so. And I've been here twice, and I think Jamie was here 3 times or 2 times, so a long time. You're one of the longest, most knowledgeable congregations about justice and about IJM. So you might be thinking, well, do you ever make any real headway, or is it just good stories about one or two people? The good thing is that we make lots of headway. We just got these figures in the last week. Last year, there was 3,500 people who were rescued from some form of modern slavery, sexual slavery or bonded labor slavery, little girls who have been abused and so on. 3,442 people rescued. 381 people were arrested, the predators who caused this pain. 325 were formally charged and 153 convictions. Now, those aren't sequential because we have cases going on all the time. So the convictions are not from the arrests from this year. But what we see is it starts ramping up. When we finally got our first few convictions, now the next year we got a few more, now we're up to 153. And literally we only had, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, we only had a handful of convictions that had made their way through the court. Because the court, a trial can take a long, long time. And at first there was a reluctance to prosecute people for any of these things that we are working on. But now we see a momentum building and we see people getting jail terms of 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and life in prison. So does it make a difference? It makes a difference in the longer term. We have a movement just in the last 3 or 4 years to, on our where our offices are, to talk to churches there in those countries, and some of them have very few, to see if they might support the work of IJM. So in the last year, around the world, in the field where these atrocities happen, that we care about, we now have 102,556 people praying. That's astounding. Because if you added up all the people praying in the West, it doesn't come anywhere near that. Not anywhere close to that. There are 4,500 prayer groups, people who get together specifically to pray for IJM and for justice. 234 justice churches. These are churches who decide to go beyond just hearing a message every now and then about justice and take on for themselves the responsibility to learn, to educate their own people, to give, and to begin participating in justice right where they are, to become people who care about what's happening and taking on the responsibility themselves. 234 justice churches. In Canada, we don't have that many churches supporting us, not even close to it. We have probably 100 or less that give on any kind of regular basis. But we have all kinds of material to make that happen. We have Bible studies, we have books, we have all kinds of educational materials that can lead you into a better participation in justice. And they had 738 volunteers, people who are working for free. And of course, that's in the Christian world, that's usually the best kind of worker to get. Although they really are reluctant to do what they're told, I find. So does it matter? Does it make a difference for the long term? Yes. But you might say, so you had a good year. But seriously, does it really, in the long, long term, in the permanent sense, does it make a difference? Well, I'm glad to tell you that yes, it does. And it has to, because we have more and more situations that we can respond to. This is a picture in Thailand of a man walking down the street with a little girl. If you go on the internet and just Google street scenes in Thailand, you will get videos. These are home videos that people have taken on their vacation and posted in various places. And they're just filming people walking down the street. And as you watch them, you'll come to some where there is that kind of thing going on right in front of you. You'll watch them walk by, and then another, and then another, and another. That's called sex tourism. That's when somebody from one part of the world travels to another part of the world to abuse children. We have them leaving from Canada to do that. We have them from the U.S. From all over the developed world, they'll go to places like Thailand where children are for sale and there's no punishment. So can we make a difference in the long term? We can. Because there's a lot more perpetrators that need to be arrested and put behind bars. We find that with bullies, with people who take advantage of others, they only stop if you make them stop. There's no voluntary stopping of bullying, of hurting other people, especially when they're making a lot of money doing it. And this is a $32 billion a year enterprise, the abuse and trafficking and use of other people to make money. The only thing that's more profitable is illegal drugs. And we need to see more people go to prison, but we also need to see more people get out of prison. It's an interesting quandary, isn't it? To have the right people in the right place at the right time. So what kind of long-term results do we have? Well, again, just this week, we got some very interesting data about what's happening around the world in IJM. This one is an old one. This is actually from 2003. So it's 11 years old. And Svay Pak was one of the early places in Cambodia, a village that was primarily dedicated to the abuse of children. We had done a number of raids there, and then after doing that for a period of time, these kind of things appeared on websites and chat rooms where pedophiles frequented. Warnings to one another, don't go there anymore. If you go there, you're going to get arrested. It says, if you go there, you are guilty. It's a forbidden place and under investigation. So they had to warn each other, don't go there anymore or you're going to end up in prison. That's pretty cool. When the bad guys start running away, when the people who take advantage of others are proven to be the cowards that they are. That's 10 years ago. Now in Svay Pak, there is a church, there's a whole ministry dedicated to the girls that have been rescued from those brothels. We have a three-year project in the Philippines where things were measured at the beginning in terms of how much underage prostitution there was, and then after 3 years of intervention, these results were recorded. 79% reduction in prostituted girls in 3 years. The number of raids that we did in that time was very finite. It was less than 50 brothels that had been raided. And there are hundreds and hundreds of them there. There was less than 250 girls who were rescued from those places. But it resulted in a 79% reduction in the availability of minor girls. And if you went there as a pedophile and decided you're going to try to find a girl to abuse, you, instead of taking 30 minutes as it had in the past by just asking a cab driver or the concierge at your hotel, it took 7.5 hours. To find a girl to abuse. And we know that pedophiles don't have that much courage to wait around for 7.5 hours. So does it make a difference? It makes a big difference. When God's people stand up for justice, they will have an effect. And we've seen it over and over again. So this came just this week in Guatemala. We've been working in Guatemala for a number of years, and 3 years ago, the Guatemalan government asked IJM to train the Guatemalan prosecutors how to win a rape case. because we were winning 9 out of 10 when we assisted the government prosecutor, and those that didn't have our help were winning 1 out of 10 cases. So we've done a bunch of that training now, and in Guatemala, they now have a national standards. They've created national standards for the prosecution of child sexual assault cases, and this is fully supported by the Supreme Court of Guatemala and the Secretary of Justice. And those provisions will hopefully become entrenched in law this year in Guatemala. So, does it work long term? It begins to snowball after a while. In the Philippines, because of that work that was in Cebu, we have the government there is trying to create and train special groups of police officers whose only job is to target underage trafficked children. And their goal, the government's goal now, is to have one of those units in every district in the Philippines, in every police district of the Philippines. That'll take some time, but we know that it already works because as a result of that work in Cebu, there's a group there, and they're called RATS, Rapid Anti-Human Trafficking Unit. And the RAT unit has specialized training. They get special uniforms, they get vehicles, they're held in high esteem, and they're very, very zealous about their work. In Cambodia, where Svay Pak is located, in the last number of years since we began working there about 10 years ago, in that place, in Svay Pak, it's becoming harder and harder to even find a girl to rescue. They're still there, hasn't been eliminated fully, but now the Ministry of Justice and the Ministry of the Interior have instituted rules that say that the police must have undercover ability to raid brothels. Up till now, it's illegal for a policeman to go into a brothel undercover and gather evidence. We could do it in IJM at the risk of our lives, but the police actually couldn't do it. There wasn't a law allowing them to do it. And they're hoping that that authority will be granted in 2014. In Uganda, we fight against the taking of property from widows, the stripping of widows of all that they need for their livelihood. And this year, as a result of our second office there, there are now 6 police stations which have a desk and a person dedicated to investigating those crimes against widows, anti-property grabbing desks. The people are trained to do this. They are critical first responders. And the police and the local leaders of the local governments are those first responders. They also launched a massive radio and TV campaign this year and a print campaign so that thousands and thousands of people are being educated in the country that this is illegal and you will be stopped if you try and do this. Long term. I'll skip down to the last one there in Delhi. Our newest office in India, our 5th one, is in Delhi. And there we are working on a grant from Google. Every day you use Google, you can thank God that Google gave multi-millions of dollars to IJM 2 years ago to begin training other organizations to do what we do. In other words, to replicate what we do. And as a result, last year there were over 900 rescues just by those organizations that are learning for the first time. And a national consultation was held in India for the first time ever on how to tackle slavery in the country. And they're proposing to work on 21 districts in the country which will be completely slave-free. So does it have a long-term impact? Majorly long-term impact. That's what we're trying to accomplish by one by one by one, eventually you can change all of society. It's hard work, but it's not impossible. It's just very, very difficult. So someday you're going to be asked, perhaps, where were you when modern slavery was crushed? Did you pray for it? Did you talk about it? Did you dedicate any funds to it? Did you help make it happen? Did you take the time to understand it? Did you change your career because of it? My oldest daughter is now an RCMP officer in Williams Lake, BC. And her long-term goal is to work in anti-human traffic on an international level as an investigator. She spent 2 years in India with IJM. And so she has to do 5 to 10 years of police work before she will be qualified and chosen for that kind of a position. So she's out in Williams Lake, which has the second highest number of cases per officer in Canada in terms of investigative police work. And she loves it. She loves every minute of it. She's learning all kinds of skills. She's learning all kinds of new ways of getting at the truth and working with people to stop what they're doing. And there's also a funny story just about every day about what human beings will do when they're trying to get away from a police officer who can run faster than they can. She also gets the odd bear. She has to figure out how to get down out of a tree. We live in a world where there's a plague of predatory violence going on against the poor. So Gary Haugen, our director, has released this new book this year called The Locust Effect. And it's about how that violence is devouring the poor and devouring all kinds of efforts to help the poor that are taking place in the world today. It's a tremendously good book. It was just released last week, and we have a dozen or so copies here, I think. There's a table out front, and there's a table near the back entrance as well. You'll find books and other things there where you can begin to learn more about IJM. So take a look at that book. It's a very, very useful tool for you in understanding what's going on in the world. We also have a global prayer gathering every year in Washington in April. Maybe it's time somebody came from this church. There'll be about 1,400 people there this year, and it's a couple of days of hearing reports, a little bit like what I've given you, but firsthand from people on the field, and it's a time of praying. It's one of the most special weekends you will have had in your life if you come to pray with 1,400 other people for causes like this. Very energized, very exciting place to be. So do you want to come? There's a group of us going from London, April 3rd to 5th. You might have to take some time off. It might cost you something, but justice always costs somebody something. So seriously, does it really matter? Of course, the answer is yes. It really does matter. It matters to God. It matters to the victims. But does it matter to you? I became a Christian at 14 years of age, and I had to make a conscious decision about turning to God. The fortunate thing was, I had nothing to lose except all my sins. I could receive forgiveness. It was a tremendously profound experience to come to that realization. I was only 14. But at the same time, I also realized there was nowhere in the world I could go and God wouldn't be there. There was nothing I could attempt to do where God wouldn't be with me. There was no danger so great that God couldn't lead me through it. For a 14-year-old boy, that's about as exciting a proposition as you can get. You get the forgiveness of sins, and you get this whole world to be God's agent for the rest of your life. So that was a great decision I made at that time. But of course, throughout the intervening year, the following years, I made lots of decisions. Where to go, what to do, how to do it. And some you're compelled to do by illness and by other circumstances. But maybe it's time for you to make a decision about what you want to do about justice, that you want to make a difference, that you want to be one of those people that sets the whole chain in motion. And we'd be glad, we'd be honored to have you participate in IJM to do that. So thank you very much. We're around this morning. You'll find me eating cupcakes if you want to talk, or you can get some of the resources at the table.